Hello, I'm Kirsty Young. Thank you for downloading this podcast of Desert Island Discs from BBC Radio 4. For rights reasons, the music choices are shorter than in the radio broadcast. For more information about the programme, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4. My castaway this week is the designer Pat Olbeck. If you've ever used a tea towel, wrapped a gift, worn a dress, hung wallpaper, owned a tablecloth or picked out curtains, then there is a very good chance indeed you know her work. From dress fabrics to table linen, wrapping paper to pottery, for more than half a century, her creative output has made its way from high street stores and National Trust gift shops into millions of homes. The fact that she was born in Hull between the wars to Polish emigre parents might make her beginnings sound rather drab and dour. Far from it. Her father was a furrier who also designed and built the family home, each room inspired and themed by his travels through Europe. Her mother had a taste for luxury and gave her youngest daughter an appreciation of the finer things in life. She went on to study at the Royal College of Art, coming of age during the Festival of Britain. The technicoloured optimism of that era seems to characterise the vibrancy of her output ever since. She says, "I like in my work to show people what it is that I find really wonderful about something. I like details, the little things, the small decorations of life." So welcome, Pat Olbeck. Inspiration. Where do you find your inspiration?
Well, I find my inspiration mostly from flowers and gardens. But I find it all over. But it's easy to take a flower and put it in a vase and look at it in detail and really find out what it's all about.
I read once that each morning you go out and pick a little flower and paint it. Do you still do that?
Well, if the weather's not too bad, yes, I like to do that. Except I'm finding it rather difficult to bend over double to pick tiny flowers on the ground.
Yes.
And I have to have my husband pick them. And I have a terrible habit of telling him where to put the scissors.
In the nicest possible way.
In the nicest possible way.
We are witnessing a great decorative design resurgence right now. You know, everything from mugs to floor tiles to clothing. Are highly decorated when we look at them now in the shop windows and on the shop floors.
Yes.
How did you survive the monochrome years when everything was beige?
Well, there was a time when I used to use a lot of browns. And a design I did for the John Lewis Company called Daisy Chain had to come out in a brown colourway that year. I've never really cared for the beige brown look, but one goes with the fashion but does one's own thing within it, I think.
You are known, I hope you don't mind me saying this, as the Queen of the Tea Towel. How many tea towels have you designed for the National Trust over the decades?
I think probably about 300, 350 maybe, because I did them for the National Trust but also the National Trust for Scotland.
Let's have some music, Pat Olbeck. Tell me about this first disc that we're going to hear this morning. What is it and why have you chosen this?
Well, one of the things that I think I boast about is that I think I discovered Frank Sinatra when I was about 10 or 11. In the morning at 11 o'clock, there was a programme called American Forces Network. And I used to listen to records all by myself, almost hugging the wireless. And there was the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra. And on it, it said, "With vocal refrain." And that vocal refrain was Frank Sinatra. And I swear that I swooned when I first heard him sing.
I'll never smile again until I smile at you. What good would it do?
I'll Never Smile Again, Frank Sinatra with Tommy Dorsey and his orchestra and the Pied Pipers, recorded back in May of 1940. So Let's chat for a moment, Pat Albeck, about Horrocks' dresses. There they were in the 50s and early 60s with their nipped-in waists and their full skirts and these fabrics that sort of epitomised that sunny moment that Britain seemed to be wanting to embrace. You were designing the fabrics. Were you wearing the dresses?
Yes, I wore the dresses. There used to be a fashion show when the collection was done and I used to have my eye on probably one of my own prints.
So tell me about the very first time that you saw one of your fabrics made up into a beautiful dress, and I think it was gracing the very smart windows of Bond Street. What did that feel like?
Well, I felt that I was changing the world. It was a very, very simple, ordinary summer dress. When I worked for Horrocks, they used to make a sundress and a bolero, and they had in Fenwick's window three colourways of this dress. And I stood there and I looked at the people passing by to see if they were fainting with joy. But they weren't taking very much notice, but I was very, very pleased to see it.
And those designs that you've done and that you've sold so many of over the years, let's talk then for a minute about tea towels, because I've noticed with your tea towels, many of them are pictures in their own right, and yet they're going to hang limply on somebody's little hook in a kitchen and people aren't going to appreciate them as pictures. Do you rather wish they were sort of framed and up on the wall?
Well, some people do frame them, and if people have got my tea towels pinned on their wall, I'm not going to complain. But they are functional. But I think it's the fact that I took up textile design and not painting, that when I was given the tea towel, this oblong, to fill, I felt I could do a picture. Cheap tea towels at the time were made of continuous fabric that you just cut into without a border. And I was trying to make it into a decorative picture. They weren't serious paintings.
The small decorations of life, what a lovely phrase that is. I'm wondering for you, the bed linen that you sleep in or the mug that you drink out of or the wonderful jacket that you're wearing today, how much do those small decorations of life matter to you personally?
Well, they mean everything. Everything. Everything has got to be looking good. I don't have much trouble because the cups I drink of will be designed by my daughter-in-law,
who's Emma Bridgewater.
Yes. And so I have a house full of very nice pottery. I had pottery before my son, Matthew, married Emma, because I've always loved pottery. And my mother, we used to dine on Clarice Cliff.
You're slap bang in the middle of your ninth decade now. Are you still working?
Ninth decade?
You're 85. You're on your way to...
Does that mean I'm in... My goodness me. Yes, I'm still working. I've been working all the time. And I always worked at home, which was marvellous. It meant that I could be near my son. And Peter was working at home. And we all worked together. And Matthew saw us working. And I think because we were drawing, he was drawing too. Yes, I'm still doing it. And because there's been a big vintage influence at the moment, I'm thought of as really having a renaissance.
Given that you are still working, do you feel that life sort of gets in the way of what you really want to be doing? Would you just really spend every moment of every day doing your work?
I would rather be at my desk than anything except at the table eating or in the garden.
Let's have some more music, Pat Albeck. It's time for your second of the morning.
Well, we're going to hear a piece of Schubert. It's a fantasy in F minor, and it's played by Paul Lewis and Stephen Osborne.
And why have you picked this?
Well, I saw Paul Lewis play in a house in Norfolk and rather fell in love with his piano playing. And I've been listening to this particularly lovely record about 6 o'clock when designing isn't going quite so well or just beginning to come very well. I listen to this perhaps three times over.
Thank you.
was part of Schubert's Fantasy in F minor, played by Paul Lewis and Stephen Osborne. Your parents, Max and Sarah, then, were from Poland. They came here before the First World War. And your father... Now, I've never said this. With all my castaways, this is a new sentence for me. Your father was a furrier and an anarchist.
Yes, he was an anarchist.
Tell me more about him.
He was a very clever man, although I didn't agree with everything he said. And we used to get a lot of literature brought into the house. But one that really attracted me was something called Freedom, the Anarchist Fortnightly. And I used to read it. I must be about 12 or 13 when I took to this. And he really believed that the world would be better without any sort of management at all.
When I say he was a furrier and an anarchist, did those two things sit comfortably together?
His fur coats were not particularly luxurious. He specialised in rather ordinary fur coats to keep women warm in Hull. I mean, we never had that much money for luxury, although you said that my mother was luxurious.
I did. Was that fair?
It was fair because she used to like luxurious things. I remember her buying a hat that cost £12 and telling my father that it was £2. And so she did like luxury, but we had luxury in the winter when the fur coats were selling. And in the summer, we didn't have very much money at all.
And so your dad, this political man, this businessman, and also he himself didn't actually design the interior of the house, but he conceived this interior that he wanted of the house that he built. What did it look like?
Well, from the outside, it was a very normal stockbroker Tudor detached house. But he got the local stage designer to do the interior designing so that each room had an extraordinary look. I, in my bedroom, had a star light in the ceiling cut out of glass, and it lit up at night. And I had Little Red Riding Hood as a fireplace designed by the students at Hull College of Art. And each room was a very definite colour. The last room in the house to be decorated had a peach mirror on one wall with a clock set into the peach mirror of amber squares of glass. And he'd run out of money by then. And the only thing that was in that room was a grand piano.
Let's have some more music, Pat Albeck. What are we going to hear now?
Well, we're going to have the first record that ever came into this house. My eldest sister was mad about a singer called Jean Sablon.
Yes.
And this is Jean Sablon singing J'attendrai.
J'attendrai. Le jour et la nuit, j'attendrai toujours ton retour. J'attendrai car l'oiseau qui s'enfuit vient chercher l'oubli.
Jean Sablon and J'attendrai. And which sister was it you said that brought that into the house?
My sister was called Fanny.
Yes, and you were close to your sisters, were you?
I was very close to my sisters. In fact, they practically brought me up because they were all much older than me.
What were your parents doing then?
Well, my mother was looking after my father.
Right.
And my father was trying to sort out the world.
Do you remember the first time that you drew something or created something and stood back and thought, oh, that's rather good?
I didn't think I was all that good as a child, but I used to do decorative things, and I had a very good art teacher at my first school who taught repeating pattern, which was a very important part of my life. And I do remember the first art materials that I was bought, which were a box of poster paints with six colours. And I remember doing lots of decorative pictures, which were influenced by 30s and 40s paintings, really.
It was 1946 then when you went to Hull School of Art. Can you describe to me the atmosphere among the young students at that point?
Well, it was very exciting at Hull because it was just after the war and there were a lot of ex-servicemen coming to finish off their training. And because they were mature students, they already drew much better than the younger ones. So we had very good people to follow.
And your teachers at art school must have been very proud then when you won a place at the Royal College of Art in London.
Well, the principal, who didn't think much of my work, was quite surprised. He said, even the Royal College makes mistakes occasionally.
What do you make of that?
Well, the thing was that he really took me on in sufferance because my sisters all went to university and I wasn't academically clever enough to go to university, and I was really sent to art school as a sort of second choice. And he took me, really, and thought they might be able to do something with me.
When he said that even the Royal College of Art makes mistakes, didn't you want to say, well, it wasn't a mistake and my stuff's rather good and that's why...
No, I was 20. I was just so unbelievably thrilled to get into the Royal College that nothing upset me at all.
Let's have some more music, Pat Olbeck. We're going to listen to your fourth of the morning. What is it?
This is Chopin's Waltz in A minor. It's a very simple piece and I think it's very moving. And when I was 75... I took up piano lessons again. I started at the age of about 5 or 6 and did it until schoolwork became more important and left it, really. And then quite late on, my third grandchild, Margaret, did lessons and she really hated them. And as most piano teachers are extraordinarily fierce, I was really rather frightened of saying, we don't want to have you anymore. So I took on the lessons myself. And this was a piece I nearly got to learn until my middle fingers started giving up. But I still listen to this lovely piece.
Chopin's Waltz in A minor, played there by Peter Jablonski. So, Pat Olbeck, the Festival of Britain was in 1951. That was the year you came of age. You turned 21, and of course it was really essentially a promotion, a celebration of British industry and design. Its heart was at the South Bank of London, but there were things taking place all over Britain at the time. What are your memories of that time?
Well, I remember London looked just amazing. I remember the Dorchester Hotel covered with dark red and pale blue bunting, and all the way down Piccadilly, all the lights everywhere in London was decorated by architects and designers. But it was part of a really exciting movement which influenced all design at the time.
Did you go and visit the exhibitions on the South Bank?
You know, I didn't, but Peter, my husband, was a night watchman and I should have gone. Well, he wasn't my husband then, right. But when he was a student at the college, he was a night watchman.
You mentioned Peter there. That's Peter Rice, the theatrical designer for operas and ballets. You've been married for 60 years now, more than 60 years, actually. How did you meet?
Well, when I went to the Royal College, all the people that ran societies, like the Music Society, the Christian Friends, or the theatre group, well, Peter ran the theatre group, and he was putting on a production of The Tempest and put up a form to fill if you'd like to be in it. Well, I am no actress, but I wanted to get a bit nearer to this head of the theatre group, and so I put myself down for a nymph. But I was rejected because I was too fat. He said I couldn't be a nymph, but would I be more or less prepared to work my fingers to the bone for the rest of my life for him?
Did he say you were too fat?
I can't remember whether he did. But he was very nice about it if he did. He asked me if I could make props. And he was designing for the Royal College of Music, which was next door at the time, where Joan Sutherland was then a student.
How did he propose to you?
Do I have to tell you this?
You don't have to tell me anything, Pat.
I can tell you, but because times have changed. But it was on a prop bed in Aylesbury, Aylesbury Rep. And I used to have to go down on Saturday night to help get the scenery down from the last production.
For the new production to begin.
For the new production on Monday. Yeah. And there was a double bed in this scene, and he asked me to marry him on that double bed.
So glad you did tell me. And what about these two designers then planning their wedding? Did you imagine sort of, you know, tulle and delightful canopies and flowers and a great sort of abundance of beautiful design?
I don't think any weddings were like that post-war. Mm. Some people must have had good weddings, but students didn't. Peter told me we were getting married on a Thursday. He told me he'd made an appointment at Kensington Register Office for the Saturday. And we got married and we had about 8 friends. I wore white gloves and a brown Swedish sort of dress. And that was that. I cooked a very mediocre lunch. And there was a marvellous woman called Margaret Lashner who taught weaving. She had a Morris Minor and said she was going to Reigate in the afternoon. Would we like to go to Reigate for our honeymoon? Which we went and saw a film called Duel in the Sun. And then came home to a flat which 5 students shared. And I'd been married 60 years.
Clearly quite a good basis for a marriage then.
Yeah.
Let's have some more music, Pat Albeck. We're on your 5th of the morning.
Well, having mentioned Peter designing for the theatre, I have been to an awful lot of operas in my life, and the one opera that makes me weep is Eugene Onegin. And particularly I love Lenski's farewell aria, and it's sung here by Placido Domingo, and it's wonderful.
Lenski's aria from Tchaikovsky's Eugene Onegin, sung by Placido Domingo. Edward Downes was conducting the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. Venice Fish Market is one of your very early fabric designs. How much did you travel as a young woman then for inspiration?
Well, quite a lot, actually, for then, but people hop about the whole time now. But I won a travel scholarship when I was at the Royal College, and I went to Italy and I went to Venice, and I did a lot of drawing. But the man who employed me, who found me at the Royal College, Jimmy Cleveland Bell at Horrocks's, was very imaginative, and anything that I did which was new and unusual, he would promote. And he said, let's use some of your drawings you did in Venice. And that's why we did the fish market.
And you went to Australia at one point too. Was it, again, that was for work?
That was another travel scholarship. The Cotton Board in Manchester were giving scholarships to designers who'd worked for more than 5 years in industry, and I won it. And it was the very, very exciting trip, and I loved it. But unfortunately, I won it and became pregnant the same month, and I couldn't take it for a year because I was about to produce Matthew Rice.
And when you did produce Matthew Rice, did you take him with you?
No, I'm afraid I left him at home with Peter and a nanny, and I was only away for 2 months, and my doctor said this is the best time to leave him when he's settled in life, but not settled enough to miss you.
And there was a significant gear change from those sort of bold 1950s and early 60s designs into that more sort of relaxed, muted, ethnically inspired designs of the late 60s and into the 70s. Did that suit your natural style, or did you have to force yourself to design that way?
No, I never let anybody force me to do anything. I think one reacts to fashion naturally, and I find myself wanting to use a colour and realising that everybody else is using that colour at the same time, because there's no point in going out on a limb and doing what people don't want. But I never think of myself as being anything but a customer and a shopper. I just happen to do the designs. I'm not trying to educate people with my designs. I'm trying to please them and do things that are irresistible.
Let's have some more music, Pat. We're on your sixth.
Well, after Horrocks's, I worked for a man called Sam Sherman, who made dresses called dolly rockers for very young people. And he had a very particular colour sense himself. And he told me to go and see a film where the colour was simply amazing. And so I went to see Les Parapluies de Cherbourg. And it's a film that still makes me weep. It's a very, very sad story about somebody who says they'll wait for them and they can't wait for them.
Mon amour, je t'attendrai toute ma vie.
Je ne penserai qu'à toi.
Reste, ne pars pas, je t'en suis.
Part of the soundtrack of Parapluies de Cherbourg, composed by Michel Legrand. The song was sung by Daniel Lucari and José Bartel. You've said, Pat Albeck, I like to be the same as everyone else and I'm delighted not to be. Well, isn't that interesting? What do you make of that?
Well, I'd like to be the same as everybody else in the fact that I'd like to be 4 inches taller and 6 inches narrower.
How tall are you?
Just 5 foot.
Right.
So I'd like to be like everybody else in that way. When I was small, I wanted to have straight hair and a bow at the side, which all the girls at school seemed to have, and mine was very curly and fluffy. I wanted to have meals at the right time, like other people did. I wanted to belong to things.
Why did you feel you didn't belong to things?
Well, partly because my mother was an Orthodox Jew, and I wasn't allowed to do certain things. I'm quite worried because she wouldn't let me learn to swim, so I'm not going to be able to escape.
Ah, yes, that
I did.
A problem.
I can swim, but very badly. But she took too much care of me, I think, and kept me in cotton wool. I didn't feel out of place at school, though. I was hockey captain and netball captain. And when I went to art school, I became like everybody else because everybody was slightly strange.
And when you were bringing up your one and only son, as you describe him, what sort of mother have you been throughout the years, both at the beginning and now?
What sort of a mother have I been? I don't really know. I think probably a spoiling one. But I don't think that he's a spoiled person.
And he, your son, like your husband, is also a designer, as you say. Did it bring you great joy to see that he was interested in the things
absolutely.
You were interested in?
Absolutely, yes. In fact, at one time he employed me. He had his own company and I've got little boxes that says Pat Albeck for Matthew Rice, which is great joy.
And it's been very difficult today to get you to take credit for anything at all. But I bumped into somebody this week who told me, well, the only reason that I ever became an artist and a designer was because of Pat Albeck, you know. Are you somebody who has taken joy in mentoring people? And...
Well, yes, I didn't teach, but I used to have a design assistant every year. And so I always had a young designer graduating from art school coming to work for me. And I did produce some rather good designers from these people.
And when you have been nurturing these young talents who've been working alongside you, is there a single piece of consistent advice that you've given them over the years about pursuing
yes,
creativity?
Yes, the consistent advice is never do anything just because you think it'll sell. Do what you like and what you would buy. That is actually my words of wisdom. I hate it when people say, oh, they'll love that. And when I was working for the National Trust, people say, oh, you're working for this middle class, middle age, something. No, I am them. I do what I like and hope that I'll get through and they'll want to buy the things I do.
Let's have some more music, Pat Albeck. This is your seventh.
Ah, well, this is not as sad as all the other records I've got. I discovered only this year Jake Thackeray. A great friend of mine in Norfolk gave me a disc with his songs on, and I played them in between the Schubert. I sometimes play Jake Thackeray to make me laugh. And this one is quite naughty, really, and it mentions everything in life that's important to me.
Isabel makes love upon national monuments with style and enthusiasm and anyone at all. Isabel's done Stonehenge and the Houses of Parliament, but so far little Isabel's never played the Albert Hall. Many a monolith has seen Isabel, her bright hair in turmoil, her breast surging swell.
That was Jake Thackeray, Isabel Makes Love Upon National Monuments. So your career, Pat Holbeck, began in this sort of post-austerity Britain as it was then. There was this burst of creativity in the 50s which fired you out into the creative landscape. Now, when you look at the health of British design, how would you assess it?
Well, I very much like what I see. I like how the young designers are using the computer to find easy ways of reproducing natural forms. I wish that at art school they would spend more time really doing careful studies of plants and knowing what they look like. I wish there were some more hand-drawn things. But actually, you can more or less put anything onto fabric. And I think people have done it awfully well.
This extraordinary career that you've had then that has spanned over 60 years, what do you think has been the secret of your professional longevity?
I think sticking at the desk, really. Really working all the time. I know lots of people who've been to art school, were very talented, stopped and had children, and said, I'd love to get back to it. And the thing is that unless there is clean paint water and nice new brushes and a lot of paper and some paints and some crayons or whatever there is there waiting for you to use, it's very difficult to actually start again and get everything out. So I think that everybody should try and keep a little space in their house where they can go and create.
Do you still get a little creative thrill in the morning when you see that clean water and the fresh brushes and the white bit of paper?
Oh, yes, I do. I do. It's not often all that clean water there.
Once you've settled then on this island, as we know, you're not a terrific swimmer, so you're probably going to be there for a while. You'll build a shelter. You'll make it beautiful, I imagine.
Well, I'm not terribly good at constructional things. I have to say, I hope that there will be some tree that will somehow bend over and make something for me.
Let's have your final piece of music, Pat. What are we going to hear, this eighth piece?
Well, I have four very talented grandchildren. They haven't all made records, but Lil, who's the eldest one, has. And this is her singing Lions.
That was Lions, written and performed by Lil Rice, one of your grandchildren, and Ollie Clark. So, Pat, I'm going to send you away very shortly, but before I do that, I will give you the books, first of all. You get the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare, and you get to take another book along too. What will your book be?
I would like to take Tess of the D'Urbervilles.
Ah, yes, you can certainly have that. And a luxury, too, something to soften the blow of your
isolation.
Well,
I don't know if it's asking too much, but I would like to take a desk.
Yes, that's fine.
I'm going to call it my desert island desk.
Yes, you may have that. And do you want any of your design tools?
I would like two drawers with art materials in.
Yes.
And maybe I can sleep under it.
I'm not going to get involved in what you use it for because then I'm going to be far too prejudiced one way or the other. But yes, it's a desk. And in the end, I will not be there to judge how you use it. Lastly, then, I'm going to ask you just to choose one of the eight. If you had to save one disc from the waves, what would it be?
I would like to take the soundtrack from Parapluie de Cherbourg, please.
OK, that's yours. Pat Holbeck, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island discs.
It was lovely, Kirsty. I so enjoyed it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a download from the BBC. You'll find more information on the Radio 4 website, bbc.co.uk/radio4.